Lee, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Thank you for inviting me. I'm doing very well. Thank you so much.
Of course. Well, as a way to maybe kick us off and set up a little bit of context before we jump into our conversation here, I'd love to maybe learn a little bit more about you and your background and sort of how you found your way into the world of cybersecurity. So, do you mind maybe kicking us off there?
Sure. So I'm Lee, I'm one of the founders and the CEO of Story Data. We started Story Data during the pandemic, during COVID in 2020. And I found my way to cybersecurity actually from my experience in my previous role. I worked for a large organization, Fortune 500, and I was kind of an entrepreneur in those large organizations with the goal of bringing in new technology for the global sphere. When I did it, one of the largest projects that was approved by the business and was a top priority for the organization couldn't move forward because of security, I would say, issues and blockers that prevented us from moving forward. And I just couldn't accept that there is a business need that you have the business and the stakeholders that support it and want to solve it and invest time and resources and funds. And eventually you can do it because of security that is supposed to be an enabler, not a blocker. And then I talked to, we're three founders. So I talked to my friends and we kind of brainstormed the idea of what is so hard about SaaS? What is so challenging? And then we started talking with other security and IT executive, and we understood that there is a real problem here that avoid from the business to continue its day-to-day work and innovation. And we decided we're actually leaving our very great jobs and starting Story Data to solve it.
Nice. And do you happen to recall, like, what was that issue at your previous company where security ended up blocking something and you said, all right, this is the moment. Like, what was that actual problem?
So before we started, storing data outside of the perimeter, outside of the organization, was a challenge because they wasn't sure how they're supposed to protect it, what processes, what technology they can do in order to, allow the data to be stored outside. Eventually, data of customers, of partners, of employees are, they're very sensitive, and you want to make sure that you're not putting this data in danger or under protection. And when we wanted to create those innovative projects, we wanted to rely on third parties and use technologies that are outside of the organization. And sending the information outside was a blocker for them. They didn't want to take the risk because we weren't sure how they can secure it and ensure and validate that actually the data will be protected. That's how we started understanding that data in the SaaS is a challenge. Along the way, when we kept exploring, we saw that there are other verticals and other risk type that resides in SaaS that are not handled. So every time we talk to other customer, potential customer or prospect, we were able to learn from their perspective how they see SaaS. And we saw that data was part, but also access and also the posture part. For example, how it is implemented and how it is monitored and how do you see changes? Because SaaS is great. There are a lot of changes and updates, and you can monitor it or can be aware of it if you don't have a technology solution for that.
So we're gonna jump right into it. I've got a bunch of questions. So I know last we talked, I spend a lot of my time when I'm not doing business of cyber thinking about cyber risk measurement. So I'm curious, just like when you think about a situation like that, when a business wants to take advantage of an opportunity, and as a result, they'll have to store sensitive data in a third party in a SaaS application outside the perimeter. How would you think about sort of helping them to understand why that's an acceptable risk based on whatever the parameters would be that would keep that data safe?
So first we tell them that that's the new way of working, right? You can keep narrowing and ask from employees to stay in the perimeter in the network because the technology is evolving. The business should evolve together with security at the same pace. And we showed them that they have the capability to first know, understand what happened. They felt at the beginning that they don't have any type of control around what employees do, how they share, what they share, what type of vendors or application they use. And first, we wanted to show them that they can know. They can understand how big, I would say, the exposure is. Mm-hmm. And then we're telling them what they need to do around it. So we're not just telling them how big the problem is, but we're telling them what they should do. So the way we structured it, they say, first, know what you don't know, and then see what you should do, and we'll tell you what you need to do first. Because the second issue that came up was, we use hundreds of task applications. We don't have all the resources and the time to manage them all. So how can we allow them to use so many applications without being aware of what is more critical or what we should address first? And then we've created for them a prioritization mechanism that tells them what has the highest business impact. Mm-hmm. When they know the business impact, they can feel better about controlling the risk and what is being addressed according to the business important, and not just what comes first will be addressed first. So mm-hmm. our goal was to give them a secure understanding that they can know what's going on and then what they should do in order to remediate it, and enable them to create some automation around it and workflow so they don't have to do it manually and just say, we don't have the resources and the time, so we won't allow it in their organization. So.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So once you had sort of the idea, got together with the founding team and maybe took the first few steps, what was, like, walk me through what kind of like market reaction was mm-hmm. like.
So we started, because it was the pandemic time, we had a lot of people work from home and had an extra time than usual, I would say. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of uncertainty, and we were able to reach out to many of them, around 100 executives, and talk to them about it. And we saw in the reaction that this is something that bothers them. This is something that they don't know much about, and the curiosity that came with this was very high. So we understood that we're at the right space, because, you know, security is a unique niche in the market, right? There is always challenges, always new ways that hackers manipulate their way into an organization. So they always want to be ahead and want to be able to respond before something happens. And when we talk about the SaaS challenges, there was no one that told us that it's not a concern. So we understood we're in the right direction in the market, I would say, niche.
Got it. Okay. And I guess, you know, back when you started the company, but also today, like, how are organizations typically addressing this problem? Like, do you see they have a solution that you're typically replacing, or is it, you know, sort of a new budget line item?
Mm-hmm. It's usually, we're not replacing something yet because it's a new market and they're a different approach. So we do a lot of education on explaining why SaaS security platform is the right approach to do it, because you can look at it from different ways. You can look at it from the stack perspective, SaaS versus cloud versus on-prem, etc. And you can look at this from different angle, like identity or application, or other type of, I would say, problem area. And we told them that they don't have to choose. They can get the technology today allows us to kind of create telemetry from different areas and allow them to gain enough insight and information about what they should do about it.
Yeah. Okay. And this may be kind of a naive question, but like, how do you guys compare to like third-party risk management mm-hmm. platforms?
So, yeah, third-party risk management, actually checking for procedures and processes and certification, what happened from the outside, the external surface of the vendor. We're mm-hmm. actually looking how the security is implemented in the organization, how it is configured, what's the monitoring, everything related to what actually happens in the organization. So it's not check on the checklist, which is great because you have to have both. It's actually looking on what happened in the organization and what are the actual risks that happen real time in your company and with your employees.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Cool. So as you kind of reflect on, you know, the journey thus far, what have been some of the like critical inflection points where you think, all right, that was, you know, an important milestone, an important learning that I had? What comes to mind when you think about those inflection points for the business?
I would say that the part we understood that we started the founders as the salesperson, right? We have the vast knowledge and understanding of the market and the technology and the phase where we were able to actually build a scalable process that is not really relying only on us, but on other people in the company. We're able to hire our go-to-market team and move forward, transfer this knowledge and create the process. This was a very important milestone for us. That's why I also moved to New York, to be close to the market, to be close to our go-to-market team here. And I think that was a very important milestone for us.
Yeah, okay. And I'd love to maybe learn a little bit more about that. So what was that process like for, you know, developing maybe the first version of like the sales playbook and figuring out what worked for you guys and then teaching and enabling another group of people to sell it?
Yeah. So we did the mistake that a lot of companies do, which is hire the first salesperson that is not the right profile for the team. It's not if he's good or not good. It's about the fit for the timing, because a great salesperson should be very different between a small startup company versus very large organization. Different skills, different capabilities, different state of mind. So it took us time to understand who is the right profile for us. And creating the playbook was basically taking all our knowledge and put it into something very simple that everyone can use, everyone can understand, and can also fit for, management level, but also to the practitioners. Because eventually when you talk in a sales process, you talk to both sides, the decision makers, but also the your champion, the person that you will work with eventually. So it was an ongoing process of taking our thoughts, writing it down, fine-tuning it, see how people react, and starting using it ourselves to see if that's broad enough. That's an ongoing process, I can tell you. There are always things that we update and change and process.
For sure. And what was the profile that you found was the best fit?
So, first person that understand that there are a lot of changes. It's not that we have just one pitch and that's it. We need to adapt according to the type of organization, according to their point of view, according to different things that happen in the market. If there is a new bridge, they need to know to talk about it. Person that is very flexible and understand that there are a lot of changes and it's a dynamic environment actually did really well. So that's the profile of the person that, from our experience, worked very well for early stage companies when it's not just a script and you go and you use it. It's something that you need to better understand and be flexible.
Got it. Okay. And how did you go about assessing that, like in the interview process?
So when we did reference check, we were able to check how was the experience. If there were many changes, if so, how this person reacted to the changes, how long it took this person to react, and what was eventually the goal? Was it successful or not successful? Why not? So seeing and learning from the past on how they reacted to changes and how they actually, I would say, enjoy the frequent changes and frequent thinking process around it was our way to validate it.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. One thing I've noticed just in like talking with a bunch of other CEOs like yourself and as like in my time as a seller and sales leader, like a CEO selling can be quite a bit different than, you know, an individual selling who isn't the CEO or founder. So like translating that playbook into something that's repeatable for something else can be a bit more challenging. Did you experience that at all, or have to, like, how'd you work through that if you did?
Yeah. So as I said, it's a never ending process. You always have to work on this, add more materials, fine tune your answers, make it sharp, but give enough information so they can know how to take a conversation a bit more deeper. So you need to try to find the balance and you see how they react and perform in conversation. So first calls we were joining them to better understand how they react, what type of knowledge they're missing, what is too much in depth, they need to keep it short. And as mentioned, we still do it today. We do some calls together. We hear some feedback from their perspective, from the customer and prospect perspective, and we fine tune. It's an open deck and open doc that we keep adjusting, keep improving. We get feedback. We hear some questions. We learn from the questions of the prospect. We learn from the question in the sales cycle, and that helps us to give a better response in ahead.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. And maybe switching gears a little bit, I'm curious to understand sort of the like fundraising process that you went through. Could you speak to that and just tell me a little bit more about, as you were getting the company off the ground, sort of how you thought about and how you approached fundraising?
So we did something quite unique. We did our first round from friends and family. So we actually went to our friends and family and told them we're building something amazing and they have to join. So that's how we raised our first few hundreds of thousands of dollars. We wanted to, people told me I'm crazy doing this. How can you take money from your family? But like, why? We're going to be successful. There is no other way here. So I didn't even think about an option that Suridata can fail. It's not an option. Every day it's not an option. So I feel that this was something that really showed everyone that we truly believe in what we do. And we truly believe in the business and the people, which I think the most important part in creating Suridata.
And why'd you do that versus go to a seed, some seed fund?
So I must say that we learned, and I think that we wanted to get something up and running very fast. And we wanted to focus on, we had a lot of conversation. We wanted to build something out. We wanted to go with an MVP very easy. We had some POCs potential that were just waiting based on our calls, first exploration call that we did. And we just wanted to get something up and running. So we said, what would be the best way? Talk to people that believe in us, know us, and think we can succeed. And that's what we did. And then later on, after a few months, that we had a few customers that, as a design partner that we were working with, we went to do our seed round.
Yeah, cool.
Yes.
Nice. And what did you learn throughout the full fundraising process? What were maybe some like things you would do differently if you were to go back in time and do it again?
So understand who you're meeting with. If you're a seed round, don't meet with businesses that invest in B rounds, because it's not a question if you're good or not good. It's just not a right fit for them. They don't know to evaluate the stage. They have less knowledge around it, and they can be very and more helpful during later stages. So I would say that understanding who are the right audience, it's like a sales cycle, right? You need to create a funnel. You need to better understand who are you going to meet, who is going to be the right fit for you, why. Talk to other people that are part of the VCs, for example, portfolio companies, and make a full process. Like when we sell Suridata to a prospect, they check about us, they do a background check to see how we operate, they get feedback. So we do the same, and we also understand as I said before, people are the most important thing. You want a people that have the same vision like you, that if we want to build a large company and expand and build a very solid business, we need to find the right partners for us, and not the one that want to do like short cycle, sell it in a year, and that's it. So we need to find a good fit from the people and from their vision. So that's another thing.
Cool. And I'm always curious to understand like founders sort of point of view and objective with the company, whether it's, you know, ring the NASDAQ bell, get acquired by a larger organization, make it profitable, and, you know, run sort of your own thing for as long as possible. I know this is probably like, there may be a few different layers or answers to the question, but when you think about like your motivator today, like what is it that you want to accomplish with Suridata?
So the reason we started Suridata, which is the same guideline for us today, was to build something that can do an impact to a lot of organizations. Eventually, we want to solve a big problem. We wouldn't do what we do today if we wouldn't believe that the challenge of SaaS is very huge and impact millions of people every day. And our goal is eventually to solve their problem with the best technology that we can create for them. And you know, the end goal it's a question, because you can achieve this goal in different areas, but I think that what we're focused now is on building the business. And we don't ask ourselves any other question on a daily basis rather than how we make more impact or more people, how do we reach to more people, what's the best way for Suridata to put our product out there and see how people react and what they say and get their reaction to this and see how it solves their pain points every day. So that's the question we're focused on.
Got it. Okay, cool. And another thing I'm usually looking to understand with, you know, founders like yourself, especially those who started companies like around COVID or shortly thereafter, is how running the business today, just given like market challenges for tech companies, is different than what you experienced maybe 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So could you just speak to that? Like how have you noticed changes operationally, and how has that impacted you kind of on a day-to-day basis?
I think that for us, the founders, there are always changes in our day-to-day, and there are different impacts, right? It can be the economy, and it can be the uncertainty of the pandemic. It can be the situation in Israel. It can be the economy challenge. So every time there is just a different challenge, and the best thing that we can do is to adjust and keep it balanced, right? Different situation requires different reactions. But we need, because we're very agile in our method and our way of thinking, we just need to, the best thing that we can do is to take action as soon as possible, instead of taking the time to think about how it impacts us and what we should do. We need to, every time there is something that is new and that has any kind of impact on the company or in the market, we actually take all the management team, we think together, what are the possibilities of consequences and what can affect us and how, and we're building a response that is within days and not weeks or months.
Yeah.
So, you know, every COVID has its own, I would say, even during the COVID and the pandemic, there were just different phases, right? And we as a team grew as well. So we had different phases and different economy and market situations. So we just have to think about it and just respond as soon as possible. We're flexible about everything.
Yeah.
We need to adopt the right solution. And if we did a wrong decision, fix it and do it at the second that we recognize it. Then don't wait and hesitate. And we just need to respond as soon as we see there is an issue that wasn't solved as we expected.
Yeah. Is there an example of maybe an issue that has popped up sort of recently that maybe you didn't respond fast enough, or your response wasn't as good as you would do something differently if you could go back in time? I'm curious if there's like some circumstance recently that maybe you've got a lesson learned or something like that.
I think that we can talk about it in related to our first salesperson. We saw that it's not going as well as expected, we should have made that decision earlier and say, and by the way, we did it, but just it took us too long. And the lesson learned from this was, if we feel there is something that doesn't work well, if we see the actual performances and actual fit that is not the right, we shouldn't wait too long until we make the decision. And that was part of the learning process that we had. And I think it's just something that we meet, by the way, on a weekly basis, I can say. Things that we need to decide if we wanna take an action or not. And now we're more, I would say, more focused on taking the decision and ensuring that we're not spending too much time on getting there.
Yeah, cool. Another, maybe one of our last like big topics that I'm curious to just hear your point of view on is competition. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always a balance where like on one hand, competition is a good thing because it shows there's a market there, especially in something new like SaaS security. And it's also like good sort of market pressure, if that's the right word, right? To innovate faster and stay close to your customers and ensure you're building what they most need and want. But it can also make it challenging, right? For, you know, newer organization, obviously, you know, competing with others out there. So how do you think about competition and what sort of your approach, you know, internally when you're communicating with your team, but also externally when you're communicating with customers?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, competition is good because it shows there is a market need. If it was, you know, in security, if it's not an interesting or important enough niche, no one will want to go there. And right. If you see large organization, large security companies that actually look at this niche, it means that they see the potential in the market, in the deal sizes that they can do. And it's great because, you know, they always respond. It takes them time to respond. But when they respond, it means that we, the startup companies, made some kind of awareness to the destination, mm-hmm. the need. So I can say that I wouldn't say thanks, but because of the recent breaches through third parties, the market feels the need by itself. They see that if their friends or colleagues were hacked and they didn't do something properly, they want to do something and they want to be aware. So when we look at the competition, when we go to a prospect and there is a competition, we're happy because then we can say how better we are. When there is no awareness or no competition, we need to invest more in education about why this is the right approach, why do you need that type of solution, why it's going to solve and how it's going to solve. When there is a competitor, we just perform better. When there is no competitor, we'll have to do a lot of the education ourselves. So having competition really donates and helps in doing some education to new and emerging part of security. So,
yeah. Cool. One thing that just in my research this week stood out, just comparing you guys to some of the other players in the space was, from a funding perspective, there's some competitors who've raised more funding, but also what stood out, and this is, in my opinion, as a very good thing about Siri Data is that you guys haven't raised funding in what, like a year and a half, more or less. So I'm curious just like what your funding strategy has been. Obviously, it's a tricky time to be raising money right now. But when it comes to, you know, like raising as much money as possible or running as lean as possible, but still, you know, running the company well in a competitive space, I'd love just to hear like your thought process and your strategy on that.
Yeah. So it's a good question because we had a lot of internal debates on this. Mm-hmm. And actually today we see that our strategy was right because the high valuation with that came with raising a lot of money. Today we see that there are a lot of cuts in the valuation. There are a lot of down rounds and we wanted to avoid it because we, as mentioned before, we believe in building a business. If we don't need more funds, I don't see any reason taking more funds. If we want more funds, there is supposed to be the right phase for us. So there's no real need to raise more funds before we build a stable sales process and just burn a lot of cash. That's very easy. And for us, our strategy was we want to build a solid product market fit. We want to understand that we talk with enough people, we get feedback from the right people, we get enough information from the market about our solution, and then we can scale up. That's why we took the past year from our previous round in order to actually focus on the business. Raise funds, it takes time, and we prioritize understanding the business and the need and the product as a high priority. So we decided we're going to focus on this. Instead of taking a lot, we're getting everyday outreach from VCs. And I believe that if you here for the long run and you want to build a solid business, you need to think for the long term and not just take a lot of money, high valuation, and then you need to cut it. No one likes it. Everyone are happy when the markets are up. They're not happy when the markets are down. So again, like you balance all your challenges and everything in your business, I see this as the same process. And that's how we believe that if we want to build a big company for the long term, we need to do it wisely. And we need to do all the phases without, growing fast, and then we need to fix. So we want to build step by step in the right way instead of running fast and then have to go back and then again the same thing. So
yeah, for sure. No, I'm very much with you and love the approach, because I've talked to and seen too many where it's like they get so excited after raising even a seed round and blow through most of it and have to go start raising money 9 months later. Where and being a lot more
is not a business. It's not a business approval that you're doing something right.
Right. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So how did you guys structure it operationally? Like, did you say, all right, after we get this seed round, we want this to last at least 3 years and just manage your burn accordingly? Or like, how did you sort of think through that?
So we built our milestone in terms of the product and the customers. And that's how we structured it. We always build more than just one option, and we wanted to reach to a certain point where is the right time for us to do our A round. Which we'll do next year. And what we've seen is that there are certain milestones that we want to cover them and reach them. And when we do it, we'll be able to scale fast and accurate. And we won't spend a lot of time on a lot of funds of trying and, experiment and let's hire this and then fire and hire and fire. We need to better understand what's the right process instead of wasting. It's very easy, as mentioned, to waste a lot of funds, go to every event, even ones that are not relevant, hire a lot of people and then choose. I hear a lot, let's hire 5 people and just keep 2. I think that if you invest invest right and properly in the processes, that's the right way to grow and build a solid case.
Yeah, for sure. Now I've had conversations with people who say the exact same thing. It's like, we're going to hire 10 salespeople because we know 6 months from now, we're only going to have 4 or 5 of them anyways, and we want to land around 4 or 5. It's like, well, we can just hire 4 today and get them right, and then take the rest and throw a party or something. Why don't we do that? So
I agree.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's pivot into the rapid fire round. So it's how we wrap up every interview. Basic premise is I ask a bunch of quick questions, and you share whatever comes top of mind. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Cool. What is your favorite book?
Ooh, wow, that's a really hard one. I actually read Relocation a few weeks ago. it's funny. And I think that it actually was connected to my life very easy. So no explanation, Relocation.
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 Okay. Cool. If you could change one thing about the cybersecurity industry, what would it be?
Less aggressiveness. I think that CISOs are really flooded because people are aggressively reaching out. And I think it's more of people focused on relationship and better understanding. So they will be less flooded and can better understand what is out there.
Yeah. How do you guys book meetings? That'll be the next question.
How do you book meetings?
Yeah. So how do you think about generating new opportunities like that?
Conferences. We do events every month with a small network of people that we're building here in New York. So every month around 15 people that are joining our events, and we do some our dinners, and actually we do discussions about some technology topics around the area. What do they think? And we learn from them, and we share with them our experience and insights. So we keep very close relationship with them.
Cool.
And customers that refer customers, that's the best. That's the
yeah, thing. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the best piece of professional advice you've ever received?
Can you say it again? I couldn't hear.
What's the best piece of professional advice you've ever received?
Wow. Move fast. Don't overthink about things. You don't have to take every decision the same way. Their decision can be done fast with less information, and ones that are more heavy and you need to invest more time on this, but move fast. That's the most important thing about startup. That's the reason we were here, to move fast and do big change, and that the phase is important.
Cool. And last one, if you could go back in time and get a drink with your 20-year-old self, what advice would you give her?
Just be yourself. I'm the same person from the age of 20, and keep the motivation and the positivity. I think that's the best. That's the best thing that you can, because only if you believe in what you do, that's the only way to grow and succeed.
Love it. Well, I've really enjoyed this, Lee. Thank you so much for joining me and taking the time to chat with me today.
Thank you for inviting me. It was really a pleasure.